Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Yes, welcome into Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show on this Friday night, where we always deliver the biggest and the very best in sports. We have got an awesome show and lineup over the next 2 hours. And right now, hey, we're going to kick things off with heading out to New Mexico. We're going to visit with our friends from Fox Sports New Mexico. That, of course, is Steve Bortstein, who always delivers some strong takes, some strong perspective. And Steve is joining us on our Stuart Cadillac phone line. Stuart Cadillac, real people, real value, real simple. Good evening, Steve-O. How are you?
I am excellent, Alyssa. How are you?
Well, listen, let me tell you, before the we get underway, the holidays are here, and Thanksgiving is next week, and I got to ask you, I mean, what are you most thankful for, aside from being on my show?
Aside from being on the show, you know what? I'll say this. For the last 3 years now, and you know this, we had a chance to chat a few months back, meeting in person again after a long time away. I'm thankful for 3 years ago getting a wake-up call to change my health a little bit. Stopped smoking 3 years ago.
Yeah.
I've been on a massive health kick over the last 3 years, which is continuing now, down 125 pounds from 3 years ago.
Wow.
Still doing it to this day. I'm very thankful to a little gym out here in Farmington called Defined Fitness, and they are phenomenal people over there, and they have been a large part of this kind of health kick over the last 3 years, and thankfully for them, I'm going to be around for a long time to yell at people, so that's what I'm thankful for.
Well, you look great, you sound great, and it's always wonderful to have you with us on our show. We got a number of topics, Steve, that I want to get into, and right off the top, I mean, how about the Crimson Tide? I mean, Alabama, were you surprised that they are the number one team in the country, and after handing Mississippi State that first loss on Saturday?
Surprised, no. Angry, yes, at the discontent that came about because of the supposed SEC bias. When your conference has won six national championships in the last 7 years, it's not a bias anymore. It's fact. And I'm okay with them being number one because, quite frankly, they've played better than Florida State has. I understand Florida State, until they lose, they're still unbeaten. They should still be number one in a lot of people's minds because they're the defending national champions. But quite frankly, if you just look at their body of work, I know that the schedules are different. We can argue about, you know, the cupcake schedule of Alabama as opposed to the cupcake schedule of Florida State. But if you just add up their bodies of work, Alabama's as opposed to Florida State's, it's Alabama's body of work that stands out. And again, it's not a bias. If the proof is there, and six of the last 7 years of winning national championships, for me, is enough to say that Alabama right now, that's my choice of words, belongs at number one. Now, if they lose to Auburn next week, then it becomes a different story, and then we'll have another conversation, and Florida State should then move to the number one spot, or Oregon should move into the number one spot. But just based on bodies of work, I have no problem with Alabama being number one.
Okay, so in your mind, Steve, is Alabama, are they the most complete team in college football? Because the chair of the playoff committee, Jeff Long, he seems to think so.
I think they're the most complete team, and I think they should play to their strength. And this is going to be what makes that Alabama-Auburn game so intriguing next week, is play to the run game. But that's not their offensive coordinator Lane Kiffin's style. He likes to mix it up. He likes to be a little creative out there. They have an incredible run game. Or Auburn can't stop a run game. It's like trying to stop them. They put a Band-Aid in front of a Mack truck for Auburn. And I think if Alabama commits itself to the run game in that game against Auburn, I think they'll demolish Auburn. And that's their last step right there before being national champions, and I think, or at least, you know, being in the national championship playoff there. I think they are the most complete team. Defensively, they're solid. Offensively, again, they've got weapons. And I think if Nick Saban takes a little bit more of a control of that offense next weekend, I think they'll beat Auburn, and I think they stamp themselves as the favorites to win another national championship.
Okay, since we're talking college football, how do you view Mississippi State? Should they have stayed in the top four? Should they be in the top four?
Yeah, I'm okay with them top four. I'm anticipating that's all going to change. Number four seems to be that coveted spot right now, and I think you can make a case for a number of different schools there. I still think TCU should be number four, and I think if they had actually not had, you know, kind of a yawn moment there in the first half of that game against Kansas, I think they would still be number four. I think TCU should be number four still. I can make a case, though, for a number of different schools. I can make a case also based on what happens over the next couple of weeks here that if USC or UCLA went out here, then I can make a case for one of them. I can make a case for Ohio State if they went out here. I mean, I think number four is going to change so many times over the next couple of weeks, it's not even funny, but I think you can make a case for a lot of different schools. But yeah, I can see Mississippi State still at number four, but I don't anticipate them staying there.
Okay, Mississippi State at number four. We're going to talk some more about the Big 12 Conference overall, how you view them in terms of Baylor and TCU. But what about out of the Big Ten, Ohio State? I mean, this is a program that just continues to trend in the right way, and they have had some impressive road wins and really shine bright.
And I think the future looks even brighter for them. We got news this morning that Braxton Miller is going to come back for his senior year next year. So
mm-hmm.
I think for Urban Meyer, I think that's phenomenal. I think that's a recruiting tactic more than anything else right there, is that he'll have another year under his belt. He's going to have another offseason to keep getting healthier now and not have the issues with health-wise that he's had. I think he'll continue to get better, and they're clearly the standout team right now in that Big Ten conference. I mean, you look at the rest of the conference, Michigan's going through a major upheaval right now. Michigan State still, I think, very good, but not as good. So I think you look at Ohio State right now, that conference, you know, with them and Wisconsin, both of them trending up, I think, a little bit, like you said. I think both of those teams, the future is very bright for them. And I think Ohio State's going to make a big push here in the last couple of weeks.
You know, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about how Arkansas perhaps is the most improved team in the country. Where do you rank Ohio State? Because they certainly have surprised a lot of folks.
Well, I'm a little still leery about calling them the most improved team, because I think there's such a gap between the top three and four teams in the Big Ten and the rest of the Big Ten that seems really average, Alyssa. I think you look at some of those schools like Iowa, and I think you look at some of the other schools at the bottom half of the Big Ten conference. You know, with the exception of Northwestern. I mean, who saw that one coming against Notre Dame? I mean, I think that's, you know, that was more a shocker to me than anything else, was not so much Notre Dame losing, but, you know, Northwestern having the game that they had. So I think you look at the rest of that Big Ten conference, and that to me is where I can't put Ohio State in that same class yet as far as the most improved teams. I just think some of the level of competition in the Big Ten still leaves a little bit to be desired.
Hey, Steve Bortstein is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, the fastest 2 hours in radio. We've got to step aside for a quick commercial break. We'll be rejoined with Steve Bortstein, and we're going to get into some more on the gridiron right here at YSR. You stay close. Yes, we are back at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell. We are so glad you are with us, and we want to hear from you. You can email the show at Elissa@YahooSportsRadio.com or Twitter at @eRadioSports. Remember our podcast page at YahooSportsRadio.com/podcast. Right now, we are going one-on-one with Steve Bortstein from Fox Sports New Mexico. We've been breaking it all down, the latest college football rankings. And so, Steve, talk to me. What about teams 4 through 7? Because it really is, right now, such a slim margin for error. It is a nail-biter as we wrap up these final 3 weeks. I mean, how can teams that did not get their deserved ranking improve their position?
I would love to be the person that is in that room watching the games. I'd love to be part of the committee, because they've got some real issues coming up here. What if Auburn beats Alabama? Then the SEC bias that we talked about a moment ago, that everyone seems to be so adamant about, goes right out the window. I mean, that throws everything into chaos. Then you're looking at Oregon almost being number one. You're looking at Florida State being possibly a number one team. It's very interesting to me what the guideline is, what the criteria is. Because, you know, in years past, when we were dealing with the BCS, Alyssa, it seemed to me that it was about style points. It was about beating a team by 40. It was, you know, it was about strength of schedule. And there seems to be a difference in this, in how this committee approaches the voting process and the watching of the games process here. Because honestly, again, and you and I talked about this with Mississippi State, I understand them being number four, but I could have made a case for them being dropped to seven, absolutely, because that's a bad loss to Alabama. That was a rough loss to them.
Mm-hmm, it was.
I think again, I think their number is going to drop. I think the key is play your game. If you're a college football, if you're Ohio State right now, if you're Alabama, if you're Oregon, play your game. Don't worry about style points and what the committee's going to do. Play your game. I think that's what happens to too many teams, is they overthink the process and they overthink the strategy involved in it here. You play your game. And I mean, I think that's where Florida State is doing it right. And I still think Florida State's going to make a case for themselves here. I think they're just playing their game right now. I think when you look at what Jimbo Fisher's doing there, he's not asking them to score 60 points. He's not asking Jameis Winston to play above himself. He's asking Jameis Winston to play his game. And that's what he's doing. Whether it's Heisman worthy or not, to me, is irrelevant. If they're playing their game and they're winning, and that's all that matters.
Okay, so Steve, let me just ask you this. Who is the best team in your mind right now in college football?
Alabama. Alabama is the best team in college football until we hear otherwise. And I would say that if you're looking at number two, I think it's Oregon. And honestly, as a USC guy that I am, and you know that as well as anybody, if USC does what I expect them to do this weekend against UCLA and Notre Dame the week after, I'm really looking forward to a Pac-12 championship game between Oregon and USC. But I think Oregon's very good. I think Oregon's exceptional. Marcus Mariota, to me, became a different quarterback this season, and they did well with their defense. And I know they have that bad loss earlier in the year. Don't care. They've rebounded from that. They're playing exceptional football. Aside from Alabama, I think it's Alabama in this order. I think they got it right. I think the committee, for the most part, has it right. I think it's Alabama, Oregon, and then I think it's everyone else in this big mishmash from 3 through 8.
You know, so much on our show, we talk about the Big 12 Conference, the SEC, the Big 10. What do you think the committee's view is of the Pac-12 Conference? Because I think back to our conversation in the month of August, September, Steve, and we were just talking about how the Pac-12, it really is rivalry. It's becoming a rivalry to the SEC as the top conference in the country. What's the committee's view, do you think?
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. I had that same conversation this morning with one of my college football guys. And I think the problem the Pac-12 conference had this year was UCLA. They just didn't play to what we were told Jim Mora Jr. was bringing out. Brett Hundley didn't play to his expectations. The defense was terrible. They made too many errors offensively. They had turnover issues. And I think that became an issue. I think for the committee, once they got involved, I think they held that against the Pac-12 conference a little bit. And you got to look at the Pac-12 South. I mean, the Pac-12 South is a mess right now. You know, Arizona State comes off that huge victory against Notre Dame. Then they lay an egg. And so, you know, all of a sudden now they fall a couple of notches here. The Pac-12 South has been the Achilles heel for the entire conference, because they just haven't lived up to the expectation of the Pac-12 North with Oregon. Even Stanford hasn't played up to their expectations this year. But I think the committee's view of the Pac-12 is pretty much everyone's view of the Pac-12 right now, in that I wish we would have seen more from UCLA. I wish we would have seen them play more consistent from day one.
Okay, you talk about the Pac-12 conference. Let's move around now. Let's talk about the Big 12 conference. Certainly has generated a ton of attention and chatter, and gives so much credit to TCU. Do you see them obviously going to be in that final poll and in that top four?
Boy, I'd love to. I, you and I have talked about TCU for years, Alyssa, and you know the job that they've done there to put themselves in the national spotlight is nothing short of amazing to me. And the win against Kansas State was a thing of beauty. And unfortunately, they didn't back that up with another gigantic performance against Kansas. And I think that got held against them a little bit. I really want to see them make a run back into the Big Four because I think they belong there. And I think I'm not so fond of Baylor. I've seen their act before. I've seen the 60-point performances before. I don't like their defense. I just don't think their standards are ready for that kind of national spotlight yet. But TCU, I think, is there. I think TCU is, if they're not there, they're so close that next year, I think if they bring back a nucleus of that squad next year, I think they're going to be one of the favorites.
How stunning is it, Steve, when you look at the Baylor program, that they scheduled such a soft non-conference schedule? I'm going off the top of my head here. What was it? SMU, Buffalo, Northwestern State? I mean,
right.
That's crazy.
Yeah, well, I mean, but that's where we're at now. That's, you know, I mean, look at Alabama, you know, with the schedule they play. That's why, you know, that's why everyone gets upset at the again, so-called SEC bias, and that they play these cupcake schedules here. But, you know, until we as fans, and until committees, and until these universities and conferences hold these conferences and these schools accountable for that, that's going to continue to be the case. You're going to see those cupcake opponents. You're going to see those big paydays for these small colleges that don't belong in the field with these gigantic Division I powerhouses. But we don't hold them accountable for that, and so therefore it continues to manifest, and it creates that dichotomy, if you will, and it creates that discussion of, hey, why are we still scheduling these teams, and why are we still awarding these universities that play these garbage schools?
Do you like the poll?
I like the idea of it. I like the process they're going through. I like the idea that it's a work in progress, and I like the idea that teams are held more accountable, I think, this year than they were under the BCS. I like that part of it. I don't know if that, I mean, we'll see in the next 3 weeks how it all shakes out, but I like the idea that we're holding schools accountable for not, we're holding them more accountable, I think, for not running up scores on bad teams. We just want them to win and play to their expectations. I don't like the idea that we were benefiting schools in years past for running up scores, because that became too easy, and I don't like that aspect of it. But I like the idea that they're holding schools accountable for their performance on the field. Period. End of story.
Well, the countdown is on. The final 3 weeks of the college football season, and I am so anxious, and will be watching when that final poll comes out. I know you will be too. Steve Bortstein, always an outstanding guest, and our leadoff guest tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. You stay warm out there in New Mexico, and I will talk to you again real soon. Thank you so much, Steve. You're amazing.
We'll do it very soon. Happy holidays to you and your listeners.
Absolutely. Blessings. Much more straight ahead tonight at YSR. We are so glad you're with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell, and after 7 long months, the start of the college basketball season, it is back, and it is underway. Right now, the team we're going to zero in on and dissect is the Arizona Wildcats. How about this program? You think back to the month of March, April, I mean, it is a program that continues to be on the rise, and let's not forget how close they were to advancing to the Final Four last year. Time now to introduce on our Stuart Cadillac guest line, sports writer and author Steve Rivera. Of course, he's joining us on our Stuart Cadillac guest line. Stuart Cadillac, real people, real value, real simple. Good evening. It's nice to have you with us on this Friday night, Steve.
Good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so let's get to it, because very big expectations for the Wildcats. They're picked to defend the Pac-12 crown, and they're already off to an impressive start. What has been the key to the resurgence of this program under Sean Miller?
Well, there's been some excellent recruiting. He's had a top 5 recruiting class 3 straight years. Number 1 class this coming year. He's done a fabulous job in not exactly replacing Lute Olson, 2 or 3 years removed from Lute Olson's retirement, but he's kind of taken it from there and made it unbelievably a continued fabulous program.
You know, you highlight just the impressive recruiting that he has done, but you start looking at the numbers say it all. I mean, 2 Elite Eight appearances over 5 years. They were so close, as I had said in the open, you know, to advancing to the Final Four. It's been a remarkable turnaround, hasn't it?
It has been. The thing about it with Arizona, it's always been pretty good. Lute left in 2007, 2008, I think it was. And there was a couple down years, and down years for Arizona means they just get to the tournament, which other people would, you know, rave or love about. But he's done a great job. He beat Duke a few years ago when Derek Williams was playing in 2011, went to the Elite Eight, got beat by the eventual national champion Connecticut. Last year was one shot away from getting to the Final Four, losing to Wisconsin. This program is pretty much on the rise, number two in the country right now.
Hey, we are so glad you're with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We are visiting with the co-author of 100 Things Arizona Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. Longtime sports writer Steve Rivera is with us at YSR. So, okay, the Arizona Wildcats, they got a couple games under the belt. What has been your assessment from what you've seen so far in the 2014 season?
Right, great. They're three games in, and there's a lot of work to do. Sean Miller has already admitted that. They have a fantastic talent group. I said in a column maybe 2 weeks ago that this is probably the most talent Arizona has ever had, which is saying a lot because the 88 team was loaded with Steve Kerr and Sean Elliott.
Oh, yeah.
Judd Bushler, Anthony Cook, Sean Rooks. He was very talented, went to the Final Four. 1997 had Mike Bibby, Miles Simon, all these great guys, so Michael Dickerson. But this is a talented group. How deep he goes will be determined on the close games. Last night or Wednesday night was was one of those scares they got in McHale, a rare scare. Cal Irvine came in and held the lead for about three quarters of the game, and then Arizona went on a 20-4 run and kind of blew them away. But in Arizona terms, that's a scare.
Steve Rivera with us tonight at YSR. So let me ask you this, and when you talk about Arizona, how do they stack up against some of these elite teams like a Kansas, like a Kentucky? From the body of work that you've seen so far?
Yeah, good question. I think people here in Tucson are always optimistic that there's a chance of winning a title. I've covered the team for more than 20 years, and I'm realistic enough to know and pragmatic enough to know that it's always a challenge. Even some of the best teams that Arizona's ever had has not been able to get to the Final Four. Watching Kentucky the other night, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Arizona has a lot of work to do.
Yeah,
But let's also remember it's how you play that day you play them. And that goes for Arizona as well. Wisconsin beat Arizona last year on the day that they had the ability to beat Arizona. That said, Arizona would have a lot of work to do to play to the level that Kentucky is playing to right now. Kansas is obviously very good. Even teams out west, Arizona plays Gonzaga here in a couple of weeks.
They're always good.
We'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
So there's still a lot of teams, and it's still early. A lot to learn from a lot of teams.
Okay, now I'm curious, as we reflect on last year with the Wildcats, how were they able to win 33 games and to advance to the Elite Eight? And as I said, just missed it so close by advancing to that Final Four.
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, they were 21-0, a school record 21-0 to begin the season. February 1st was one of those days you get to Cal Berkeley and play. You think you have a good chance of winning there on the road, and one of your better players goes down. Brandon Ashley suffered a pretty bad foot injury, broke some bones, and their kind of a little hope gets removed. They still play well after that without him, going 12-5. But the kind of chemistry and the cohesion and the rotation had to be changed. They went smaller, still beat teams pretty easily, but they lost five games without Brandon Ashley and eventually lost in the final eight.
Okay, you were talking about for so many years, over 20 years, that you have covered the Arizona Wildcats, obviously followed Lute Olson's program very close. Differentiate between Sean Miller's and his programming. What is the team's identity?
Right now, the team identity, they do one thing really well right now, and they've done it for the last couple of years. Last year was their calling card, play defense. Defense and get after you, kind of in a pesky way. T.J. McConnell is part of that. He's a transfer from Duquesne 2 years ago. He is not a McDonald's All-American. He is not the most physically gifted athlete. But he is the MVP of this team, in my view. He is a dogged guy. He gets in your face defensively, and he is the ultimate point guard. If you remember Sean Miller playing for Pittsburgh in 1988-89, he's that guy.
Oh, yeah.
He's that guy that doesn't like to lose and does anything to avoid it.
Steve Rivera is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. He is the co-author of 100 Things Arizona Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. We're looking forward to reliving some memories from so many of the greats that have truly been a part of this program. But I got to ask you, Arizona, they lost two of their starters from last year, Nick Johnson and Aaron Gordon, who left, for the NBA. Who is going to fill those shoes in terms of from the leadership standpoint on the floor?
Well, I think the Divins are T.J. McConnell, the guy I just said.
Right.
Brandon Ashley, who I mentioned, he's a junior now. Caleb Tarzewski, who's a 7-foot center, another junior. He's the KG veterans. So those three are kind of the assumed leaders, and Miller's kind of prodding them to become better leaders. But the guy to fill the hole in terms of athletic ability is the All-American and McDonald's All-American, Stanley Johnson. And, of course, the personality of the team is Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. Last night, Miller announced that Rondae was agreeing to go to be the sixth man.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think this is arguably not an easy thing to say, but I would argue with anybody that he's probably the best sixth man in the country.
Well, I was going to say that. Hollis Jefferson, he was the sixth man last year. I mean, what kind of impact do you see him being able to make? I mean, you're talking about from a leadership standpoint, but what about the tangibles, the numbers that he could provide?
Yeah, and he's going to be fabulous. He may lead the team in a lot of categories and still come off the bench, like if you remember Jason Terry did here
in 97, 98.
And he's going to get starters minutes. I'm talking 25 to 30, 32, but he just won't come. He would just come off the bench.
Okay, Steve Rivera with us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. We're going to jump ahead and talk about the new book that he has co-authored. Tell us about it. It's 100 Things Arizona Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die, the ultimate resource for true Arizona fans, right?
Yes, it is. Well, we started it earlier this year. We had a chance to possibly do another book as they were going to the title and came up with this. A lot of research, a lot of phone calls, a lot of stories. This is my fifth book, so I had a lot of background stories already, and I have a lot of context from covering the team for a long time. So made some calls, researched a lot of things, and came up with some funny anecdotes and stories that have come throughout the program.
Uh-huh. You know, I'm a big Dallas Maverick fan, follow the team very, very closely. Tell us some Richard Jefferson stories, because he certainly has had a lasting legacy there at Arizona. He was a phenomenal player.
Great guy, super good guy, a personality that he says what he feels. I wrote a column about him, I don't know, 18 years ago, whenever he was playing here. He reminded me, and I know this is a stretch for the older people, of a Muhammad Ali, where he says what he feels, he comes up with funny lines, and kind of says some provocative things. He's from Phoenix in the area, home state guy, loves playing here, donated a lot of money for the practice gym here. I think it was like $2.4 million.
Right, you mentioned that.
One of the good guys of the program could leap out of the gym, and part of his chapter was how poignant his speech was when Lute Olson's wife died. He was very close to her. A lot of players are. And he just came up with a great speech. I mean, a speech that you think, wow, I would love someone to say that to me about me when I pass.
Incredible. Well, it's all in this book, 100 Things Arizona Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. The wonderful Steve Rivera has been with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And you are big league. It's the first time you've been on the show, and you're a wonderful guest. Thank you, Steve-O. We appreciate it, okay?
Great. Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Much more straight ahead tonight in the fastest 2 hours in radio. You be sure and join us at Twitter at @eRadioSports. And we will be right back with much, much more right here at YSR. The Big E Sports Show rolls on with our college football coverage. And it's time now to welcome in Husker great Jason Peter and get his thoughts on the college football standings and also his perspective on Adrian Peterson's suspension without pay for the remainder of the season. Good evening, Jason. It's nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get underway with this segment, I do need to mention that Jason is joining us on our guest line, the Stuart Cadillac guest line. Stuart Cadillac, real people, real value, real simple. So, Jay, we've got a myriad of topics to discuss, and it is hard to believe there is just 3 weeks left in the 2014 college football regular season. Your thoughts on the latest rankings? We want you to weigh in on that.
Yeah, I mean, with the top 40, you can't really argue. I guess, Alabama, I guess the biggest argument is if whether or not Alabama deserved to jump all the way to one. And, I don't have a problem with it. You know, there's still a couple weeks left here in the regular season, and then you have some conference championship games. And usually this stuff kind of takes care of itself. I know a lot of people were hoping that the Hurricanes were going to be able to take down Florida State.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked like they had them there for a while. But, because that, to me, that is almost more interesting than, you know, where the top four necessarily are ranked is what the committee would have done with Florida State had they lost that game. Me personally, I think they'll drop out of the top 10. I don't think you'll see something like what you saw with Mississippi State losing Alabama, yet they find themselves at number five now this week. I think with Florida State, they would drop them out of the top 10 just because people are not impressed with what they've done, or at least how they've done it. You know, that's the biggest argument. But you have the defending national champion here. They're undefeated. Do they deserve to be in the top four? Yeah, I think they do. But I think what's making a lot of people maybe scratch their head is, what is the checklist? What is the college football committee actually looking for? Because that's the thing.
Right,
you know,
right.
It seems like it's mm-hmm. a fluctuating scale or a fluctuating list in the bands that, you know, for some teams it's strength of schedule. For other teams it's, you know, style points. And there just seems to be no rhyme or reason for how they get to where they eventually, you know, seed those top four.
Okay, so the teams, 4 through 7, they're on the outside looking in. What is your view, or give us your perspective on how you see TCU, the Frogs, right now after that barely get-by win against Kansas? That was a nail-biter.
Yeah, and obviously the TCU-Baylor is the other big topic. And for now, I like TCU where they are. But if TCU and Baylor both finish, you know, with one loss, and ultimately you have Baylor as a conference champ, you have to have Baylor in. If it's between Baylor and TCU, you just have to. And I know that there's a lot of people down there that probably, you know, don't like me much, don't like me a whole lot right now. But mm-hmm. I just think in all of this, you know, whether it was from the computers or the human element, you know, whichever way, you know, people, we used to rank teams and figure out who's playing where, the one thing that you always had, you know, the one thing that people would always say was, gosh, if they could just settle it on the field. And with TCU and Baylor, you had that. Now, was it earlier in the season? It was, but still, you can't discredit, I guess, you know, Baylor winning that football game because, you know, whether TCU maybe is a hair better than them right now. I just think that outweighs everything else when it comes to decision time. And, you know, if the tables were turned and TCU had beat Baylor, but, you know, the rankings, TCU was lower. I mean, the Frog fan base would be up in arms if Baylor got in and TCU didn't. So, you know, it's one of the interesting storylines that I'm excited to see how this college football committee is going to handle it.
Husker great Jason Peter joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. He's our regular college football and NFL contributor each and every week as we go under the helmet. Jason, kind of give us a forecast. I mean, who do you see? And when that final poll, that final rankings come in, who do you think is going to be in that top four?
Well, I mean, even though Alabama's sitting at one, you just don't know. And they still have to play the Iron Bowl. And as we've seen in previous years, doesn't really matter who's ranked ahead of the other or you know, who's in the top four of this playoff committee. You can just kind of throw, you know, the records away and what you've done up to that point anytime you're playing in one of those rivalry games. And, you know, I think they probably have one of the biggest or the percentage of, you know, the possibility of losing, I would say, Alabama, even though right now they look like they're the strongest team. You know, but I would imagine that Alabama will be there. You know, I'm not real sure how Mississippi State kind of responds. I know they got, I believe, a cupcake this week. But, you know, Oregon, I don't see them losing. You know, it's really Ohio State. I know Urban Meyer has got to be just fuming. And, you know, the problem is you're a Big Ten team, and I'm sure Urban was not happy when he saw the Nebraska-Wisconsin game, too.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
For him, you know, he came to this conference. He never thought or he didn't think that his conference, you know, would ever restrict him from winning a national championship. And right now, you know, is Ohio State, you know, one of the top four teams in the country? I don't know. You know why? Because all they've had to play over the last, you know, 6 weeks is Big Ten teams. And you just, you don't know what you really have with the Big Ten teams. I mean, I'm sure he wanted Nebraska to win that football game, and he was hoping that Nebraska would be a one-loss team playing in Indy for that Big Ten championship just to give him,
right,
you know, a little more stake in that game and a little bit maybe more reward for winning that game. But, you know, now maybe he plays a two-loss Wisconsin team who, you know, has certainly played better lately, but how does it all fit on a national scale? And I think everybody who follows college football is thinking the same thing when it comes to a Big Ten team. Oh, yeah, everyone's talking about how this team or that team is playing so much better now. But do you really know how much better they're playing? Because all they're playing is other garbage from within the Big Ten.
Hey, Jason Peter with us at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Only got time for about another question. And we were talking about that loss against Wisconsin, 59-24. What is the state of Nebraska football right now? What's going on up there? Are they getting restless?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's hit the fan.
Tell me about it.
You know, this past week, Bo Pelini on his coach's show, he took a call, and someone, you know, suggested, floated the idea that his job's in jeopardy, and he didn't respond well to it.
How did he respond?
How did he? Pretty much saying that, you know, if the caller wanted to take the stairs up to Sean Eichhorst, the athletic director's office, you know, he was more than welcome. And if they want to go in a different direction, then so be it. You know, find another coach is pretty much, you know, what his response entailed.
JP, listen, have a wonderful Thanksgiving with the family, and we'll be replaying some of the best of the Big E Sports Show next week, and we'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Much more straight ahead at YSR. Independence Oilfield Chemicals is a full-service production chemical treating company that provides technical expertise and field support for mature assets. IOC prides itself on its customer service, and the customers are the highest priority. They don't just supply oilfield chemicals, they supply solutions. It's simple. Hey, perfect chemistry between you and your oilfield chemical supplier results in superior results. Independence Oilfield Chemicals, where chemistry matters. Visit them on the web at independenceoc.com.
This Valentine's Day, create a space that feels warm and welcoming with help from Menards. Whether it's a small refresh or a big project, Menards has the tools and materials you need. Build something together and make your home a place you both love coming back to. Don't forget the sweets for your sweetheart. Get a 6-ounce bag of Russell Stover chocolate candies for $3.99 now through February 14th. Save big money and finish your projects together at Menards.
Save big.